the Mud Puppy Games Network.
Hi, Tim Kask here. Facing a TV gay and don't know what to do? Well, you might if you had listened to Save for Half.
Welcome to the Save for Half podcast, where we'll talk about old school games and the modern games inspired by them.
Howdy-do, everybody. It's Save for Half, episode 11. And yeah. I'm Blue. We're all Blue. Blue Home, that is. We're talking about the Blue Home Journeyman rules. And with me is DM Corbett.
That's me.
And DM Liz, who's not me.
No. No matter what people might think, we are not an amalgamated creature.
The Mike Liz. We actually have different opinions, and some of them may come up in this episode. But first, what have we been doing in gaming? Corbett!
I've been having to deal with buying a house, so I've been doing nothing in gaming at all. Well, that's not
Corbett
true.
Corbett has been playing Papers and Paychecks. Yes.
I have been boxing up all my games, which is a really important task to do at least once in a while to kind of retouch books once.
And make you realize just how much gaming stuff you have.
Yes, you really have. Collect crap over the years.
Yeah, I dread the day we end up moving. Wow, that's going to suck.
We can never move.
That's
we
what
can
fire never insurance
move. We have to die here.
Yep. Well, since Corbett apparently has gotten high enough level to get his own stronghold,
yes.
It's Liz and I. What have we been doing in gaming, Liz?
I can't remember if we've mentioned it already. I'm kind of thinking we almost would have had to, but our 5e game, we've gone back to 2e. We abandoned 5e, and we are back to 2e. We've kept our characters.
Abandoned
it? The Storm King adventure. You
know, but once that's over, we're going back to a homebrew campaign of chases, which I'm really looking forward to.
We're going
to
be adventuring in a city that our characters founded several years ago. Our first set of characters we gained with Chase, when they got high enough level, they founded their own city. And so now I'm going into the city that is run by my character as an NPC. So that ought to be fun.
I don't know. I've heard you're a jerk, so you can't do that much fun.
It's true. It's true. I am a jerk. So, you know. But this is Fernando, the magnificent mustache, and his disturbing collection of naked elf girl statues.
That is all completely true about his character.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember where we were, but we were looting this place, and he said there was this nice naked elf girl statue made out of, like, platinum or something. And it's like, Fernando gets it! And then once he got that, he had to get more, and, you know, it just kind of... He's only getting them for the artistic.
Oh, sure.
It's the art. It's
the articles. They really keep
you
going.
Yeah.
I just get the statues for the articles. All right.
So you've abandoned 5e, like it's on the side of the road with a flat tire and...
Yeah, I mean, we'll still play it, especially at a con. And it's certainly got some good points. I won't deny that. But what they did to magic, what they did to some of the magic items.
Hammer of Thunderbolts.
Among others. What they did to saving throws, the long and short rest Helorama of hit dice. The power creep is just weird.
Since you've abandoned it, does that make it now an old game? Hence, an old school game that we should probably review?
No. Old school is out of print, but I think we could review 5e. I mean,
Hey, our tagline says old school games and the modern games inspired by them.
Right.
So technically, we could talk about anything we wanted to.
Yeah, but I think there's an argument that some of 5e does go back to old school paradigms.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I think they tried, and...
Yeah, and kudos to them for that.
But I would not have a problem playing 5th edition at a convention, and I've certainly been enjoying playing 5e in the Frog God livestream game that I'm a part of.
Link in the show notes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't really have a problem with 5e as a whole. I am glad that we went back to 2nd edition, though. So, I think part of our problem with the game was, despite everything that Mike said about power creep, which is all true, I kind of can't help but wonder, would we be having more fun with 5e if we were playing with Chase's own homebrew adventures and not the printed 5e adventure path modules that we've been doing?
Yeah, because
I really think I have not been enjoying the Storm King adventure module, and we started playing, what was the one where you're on the
Tomb
Island
of Annihilation.
Of yeah, Tomb of Annihilation, and I couldn't really get into that one either. And is it the adventures and not the system? I think the system's okay. I've had a good time with Bard's Gate, so I don't know.
I don't either.
Take it and play Keep on the Borderlands and see how it feels.
Yeah, but not the new Keep on the Borderlands, the old one.
Right.
The old one, yes. Although I did like the little Bree Arc homage and Storm King. That was kind of cool. But anyway, we're going to talk about Blue Home Journeyman. So let's go to a commercial break and we'll head into our top five.
Into a world without nearly enough quality gamer podcasts, they came. The Grognard Files, a podcast about role-playing games from back in the day. You know they're experts because they speak with British accents. Find them at armchairadventureblog.com, iTunes, or wherever fine podcasts are served.
I know Cool, and Cool's teaming up with a good balanced breakfast.
Teaming up with Mr. T cereal, that's getting on the team that knows how cool breakfast can be. You get a crispy corn taste with a touch of brown sugar.
Teaming up with Mr. T.
It's Cool.
Teaming up with Mr. T, golden sweet crispy teas. One bite and you're gonna be eating with the team that's teaming up with Mr. T.
It's Cool.
Teaming up with Mr. T.
For half, top five. In 5, 4, 3, 2.
Top five. The Blue Holm Journeyman Rules. For those that don't know, it is a retro clone of the Holm's Basic Rules. His original version, Blue Holm Prentice, was literally like the Holmes Blue Book, and it went to third level. This one goes to 20th. It's more of a complete game. In going up to 20th level, he made some design decisions that are good, I think are good, some not so much. But we'll talk about those. If you need to know how the system works, if you played old school D&D, you know how the system works. Attributes are strength, intelligence, wisdom, constitution, dexterity, charisma, in the correct order, 3d6, roll each one. So, we're going to start with Liz.
Start with me.
Number five. What's your
number
five?
Number five. Okay. Let's see. I will say for my number five, I really enjoyed his take on how magic works for magic users and for clerics.
How was that?
Well, clerics, it specifies in Blue Holm that they can not only create their own holy water, but they can also create their own potions of healing, which I think is a very nice addition to the ability of the cleric.
It's like the equivalent of wizards making their own scrolls.
Right. So I really enjoyed that being incorporated into these rules. And magic users, the explanation for not being able to wear armor, you know, he specifically says they can't cast spells while in physical contact with iron. And that, to me, it's an analogy to the whole creatures of the Fey realm being averse to cold iron and having it actually harm them. Iron disrupting magical energies. So I liked that that little addendum was placed in there when talking about the fact that magic users can't wear armor. It gives a rationale that makes sense to me anyway.
Not just as a game mechanic.
Right. They can't wear armor because they can't wear armor.
They can't wield swords and cast magic because they can't.
Yeah, and like with clerics using blunt weapons, and he specifically has a throwaway line in there when describing it, the drawing of blood is reserved for ritual. I like that. I feel like he put some thought into giving a rationale behind what is, when it's all said and done, game mechanics to give checks and balances to the different types of characters. So I really liked that.
Okay. Corbett?
I'm going to start by being picky and pointless, as normal. I think the economy system, and I did check, actually, Holmes is similar. They brought everything over fairly well, economically speaking, but it doesn't make any sense. And I think we're being cheated.
How so?
Specifically, what caught my attention was wagons were 200 gold and horses were 30 gold. I know this seems like whatever, but I've been doing a lot of research on the West and pricing and stuff and looking at like Sears catalogs, so I kind of know what prices would generally be like. And
yeah, six horses for a wagon, that does seem a bit whack, doesn't it?
A little bit. So I went and looked it up, and like the prices for a horse in 1870 was about $150. The Blue Holm says that a workhorse is 30 gold, but by current economic standards, that should be like around $2,700. And I kind of reversed everything out and figured it up. And by the pound, each gold piece should be $130. So if you look at the price list, and feel free to look at the price list, you could follow along on your regular Holmes edition if you want to. So this really isn't Blue Holmes' fault. But if you go buy a lantern for 10 gold, that means you just bought a $1,000 lantern.
It's an awesome lantern.
Well,
or a
we
backpack
have to
for
that
5
in fantasy
gold.
Games like D&D, gold is more prevalent than in our world. You gotta admit.
Yeah, but if you look at the other things, it doesn't make a lot of sense because it kept everything. I know they went with it probably because it sounds nice and fantasy and hey, that's great. But when I spend $130 for 50 feet of rope, I'm going to Ace Hardware and complaining to somebody.
That better be good rope.
That better be some day. The hammer. They have a hammer, 2 gold. That's like $260. Am I the Pentagon? So.
Well, our items are also mass produced.
This is true.
By factories, not. And more even back in the 19th century.
That's
the
true.
Middle Ages.
Mike, I'm sorry. 5 gold for a week's worth of rations. Would you pay $600 for beef jerky? a week's worth of beef jerky?
The average peasant earns like a gold a day.
Okay. I'm not. That was just my beef. It's not really a beef because it's really the economy of a medieval world that doesn't exist. Looking at the weapons, I don't even question it. The weapons all make sense. It was only because of that dumb wagon that made me think about it because I remember looking at prices in the Old West and yeah, wagons were like $30. Granted, back then is a lot of money, but when you're
like $300 today,
well, they're quite, it was like that. That really threw me off, so I started trying to figure out what a gold piece is worth and what people are buying, and things didn't match up right. So yeah, I get it. It's fine. It works perfectly fine. I'll go buy my 5 gold piece backpack and not say anything.
Okay.
But now you know.
But we know, and knowing is half the battle.
Doggone right.
All right. Well, my 5. Alignment languages. Yes, I know they're faithful to the original, but God, I hate alignment languages. They're just so dumb. I will say he made in the description of the neutral alignment, even though he went through the unfortunately errored 5-part alignment system.
The correct 5-part alignment system.
Full of errors. But his description of neutral was really good. He basically got away from the whole balance silliness and just said totally self-interested. My only quibble there is that there seems to be an awful thin line between neutral and chaotic neutral. They seem almost identical. I'm not really sure where the difference is there, but that could just be a problem of the 5 alignment system, so I'll leave it there.
There is no chaotic neutral in the 5 alignment system.
That's true.
So, your argument is invalid. 5-point alignment system is clearly the best.
This is clearly the best. Anyway. 4.
Alrighty, number 4. Getting back to the whole magic thing. I really like what he did with magic. It's pretty cool. I really enjoy the optional rule about being able to use scrolls to refresh your spell memory while you're in the dungeon. Because Blueholm, like a lot of the other basic rules, you can't carry your spell book into the dungeon with you. So once you have cast your memorized spells, you are done with, unless you have magic items or magical scrolls with you. An option that he allows you to use if this is a spell that you memorized from a magical book before you went down into the dungeon. If you have a scroll with that same spell you memorized with you, you can re-memorize from that quote-unquote Cliff Notes version of the scroll without actually casting from the scroll and using it. So say
so
if you memorized...
destroy the scroll.
Right. So
it.
If you memorized sleep before you left to go into the dungeon and you had a scroll with sleep on it, you could refresh your memory of the spell from that scroll to cast from memory again. But if you had a scroll for magic missile and sleep was what you memorized, you cannot memorize from that magic missile scroll. You have to cast from it and lose it. So I think that's a nice, happy medium. It allows you to rememorize, but you had to have chosen that spell to begin with before you left. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Okay. Corbett?
Well, to detect evil. The magic and alignments. I got them both. No, I thought detect evil was actually a way more interesting and effective spell than in the past. I don't remember it being written quite the same way, but maybe it's because I haven't read it in a while. But you can detect evil items, evil intents, evil, just anything evil. It was really cool. Though I thought it was really odd that detect evil and detect good weren't just the same spell with a reversal. Kind of like inflict fear and remove fear. Shouldn't that be just
or cause cure.
Yeah.
Cure light wounds, cause light wounds.
It seems like they should be the same spell with just a flip to it.
Yeah, I always felt that way. Just do reverse spells. Why do 2 separate spells? Just make it a reversal. And you've got both essentially described. But that is the pattern nowadays, unfortunately.
I think they are intended to be the reverse, but it's just a description of each is given separately in the book.
I thought it was interesting that you could detect evil objects, which would
really
save time on finding the remote. So,
Where'd the thief go? There he is. Yeah, that would make it more useful, especially if you're dealing with, like, cursed items and that sort of thing. I would think that would help. Okay, well, mine. First, a couple of disclaimers. Liz and I covered Blueholm Prentice version back when we were on the Save or Die podcast, episode 117.
He said it.
Right. Second, Liz and I are credited in the credits of this book, the Journeyman edition, for special thanks for assistance with the rules. I can only assume he listened to the episode and took our advice.
They take bribes.
If so, we're really cheap. Send us a copy of your game. Okay, that's good enough.
I also enjoy key lime pie.
Just for reference. And I don't. Now, that being said, there was a gripe I made back then that I'm going to make again. And that is, when it comes to multi-classing, or as they call it in Blueholm Journeyman, combination classes, instead of multi-classing, you take the worst of everything from the worst of the 2 classes. including if you're a fighter magic user, you can't wear armor, period. Even if you're an elf fighter magic user. Nope, no armor. Flat, finito.
Well, I know the most severe restrictions apply with armor, but when it comes to weapons and magic items, the most favorable restrictions apply.
Okay. And by the by, there are no more races class, so...
Yeah. Did not like.
Do not like. Okay, Liz, number three.
Alrighty. This is concerning the monsters. If we've got an A to Z creature listing, very comprehensive, lots of new things. One of the things I liked, and this was something that we discuss when we talk to Michael Thomas, there are several new monsters. Quite a few of them come from the Lovecraftian Cthulhu mythos, and the black pudding in the character write-up, it specifically says that they are said to be the ancient creations of the old ones that kind of turned on them. I thought that was a very nice twist on where Blackfoot puddings came from.
Yeah, because if you look at the description of the old ones, they sound an awful lot like Lovecraft's great race, and they created the Shoggoths.
Mm.
Well, it's true. I do remember an article that Gary Gygax wrote when they asked where do black puddings come from, and he said when the mommy pudding and the daddy pudding love each other very much. Anyway.
Or get drunk.
Anyway. But yeah, old ones are in there. The Great Race, Mego. There's tons of Lovecraftian critters that are included. I think that's pretty darn cool. But yeah, the connection with black puddings and the old ones. It's like, yeah. I like that.
Shub shack. Woo! All right. Well, over to you, Corbett.
All right. We're all going to drown.
Okay, I could use some rain, but...
No. I was flipping through the rules, and of course I came across swimming and in movement. You know, they have the restrictions for if you're encumbered, if you're wearing certain armor, it becomes...
Don't wear plate.
That's the thing that bugged me. It was reversed from what I was expecting. Instead of the chance to not drown, it's just the chance to drown. So if you wear a plate, you have a 95% chance to drown.
Uh-huh.
But if you wear nothing, if you wear nothing at all, none armor, 5% chance to drown. Not live. just drown.
Save or die.
So you have...
Hey, there's always the chance you could hit your head on a floating log or something. I don't know.
I guess.
Yawn in the middle of deep water diving. And
That leaves it wide open for a... Like, okay, we're rolling a 1d20 on a 1. You drowned. I'm just walking across. Too bad.
Gurgle.
I don't have a problem with the armor.
The resolution here is don't swim, ever.
Never. Everybody be a cat. Be afraid of the water.
Well, considering the things that are in the water in Holmes Basic / Blue Holm, that's probably a wise thing.
That's true. There's black pudding in there, I'm sure.
Okay. My number three, I like the new playable races he put in, I assume, from Jarek Holmes' home game. They've got the Drenoi, the insect race, you know, kind of mantis-y. Something called the Feline, which I guess is for furry fans. Something called the Mahal, which are kind of evil dinosaur pterodactyl people, which makes me think of early X-Men issues in the Savage Land for some reason. You can even play orcs, which part of me is like, that's a lot of stuff extra to play. But another part of me is going, well, the original rules said you could play most anything as long as the DM made sure you were at the same relative power level as everyone else.
But talking with Chris Holmes, he mentioned that he would play lots of different things that weren't even really races in any rules. So.
Yeah, and if you read Mazes and Perils or Tales of Peril on sale now from Black Blade Publishing, end plug, when Boinger or Zerlith are going into a tavern, I mean, you've got centaurs and hill giants and all sorts of other things just wandering around the bar.
Yeah. And if you remember the old AD&D Rogues Gallery supplement, it had a lot of write-ups that were characters that Luke, Ernie, Gygax that they all played in their games. And you had a lizard man, you had a centaur, you had all kinds of interesting stuff. Judge's Guild, City State of the Invincible Overlord, you know, all kinds of critters just wandering around in the city, rubbing shoulder to shoulder, and no one batted an eyelid. So I really like that. That kind of thing just evokes that old school
super fantasy view. Anything's possible. Okay. I guess that's your two then, Liz. Or we'll go to your number two anyway.
Ah, I was going to say, well, I could make that my number two because I actually had that written down in my notes too.
Ah,
but
okay.
I will talk about something else because I have extras.
Oh, well, we're prepared.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, number two. I am going to talk about one of the combat options for weapon speed and variable damage. This was something that, again, we talked to Michael Thomas about, and he points out that this kind of fixes what we've always talked about as something that was broken in the original combat system. No matter what weapon you're using, they all do D6. And yet you've got daggers where you can attack twice, but you've got the two-handed sword that only attacks like every other round. So why would anyone use a larger weapon? You should all be using daggers where you can do multiple attacks and get more stuff.
Yeah, you actually do more damage.
Right.
Got these guys in plate mail with daggers wandering around.
Yeah, but with the option, you would then use these tables and you roll more than one die. And you use the higher or lower result.
Sort of an advantage disadvantage.
Right. So so you can use light weapons and attack more than once, but they're going to be likely to do less damage than the heavier ones. So you roll the multiple dice and you use the lower number. Or the heavy weapons that would do more damage, and you roll multiple dice, you take the higher number. So that does give you it gives you more or less the same result as if you were using 6-sided dice, 10-sided dice, 8-sided dice. You know, you're still using your D6s only, but it prevents everybody from wandering around with a whole bunch of daggers.
I don't know. I think it's pretty funny because then you can have a guy in full plate saying, my name's not Mr. Stabby. It's Sir Stabby. Thank you very much.
Sir Stabby McStabface.
Of Stab-a-Lot.
Of Stab-a-Lot.
Stab-a-Lot. Stab-a-Lot. Where we only use daggers. All right, Corbett, number two.
Anyway.
Stab us with number two. Stabbing. Oh, wait, that sounds bad. Anyway.
Stabbing away. Angels and demons. This kind of goes back to my reversal thing. They should be the same thing. The creatures in the Creatures Handbook, which there are a lot of really great creatures. They've added a lot of good stuff. I was just flipping through and I noticed angels were top of the list. And they're not much more than winged clerics, I guess. The demons have like multiple sizes and they're only evil.
Well, yeah, you don't have good demons.
Well, no, but I mean, if technically, shouldn't it be more like they're just another dimensional creature and therefore angels are just another version of the demons? Like their wings aren't bat-like, they're more feathery and that sort of thing. And
so
also demons
you subscribe to the area of D&D where angels and demons are really just extraplanar creatures. They're not inherently good or evil or anything
maybe.
Like that.
Well, it just felt like the demons had a crazy ton of powers and options. I mean, you could really deck out some cool demons, whereas angels are like, they're humans with cleric stuff and they have wings.
They fly and heal you and have a nice day.
Yeah, it's like, okay. I remember, I mean, if you're going by Christian?
Yes, we follow Chris.
Yes, Chris Holmes.
The Christian. Yeah, good angels.
Yeah.
Fantasy Wargaming. That's where you want to go for angels. They statted out Jesus, man. Jesus and Mary are statted out. God is technically statted out, but like half his stats he has question marks by, so I don't know if that really counts.
If he has stats.
I mean, that was an utterly awful game, but I got to give kudos to the guy with the cojones to stat out that. Salute.
Anyway.
So you don't like angels and demons.
Well, I like demons, but I thought angels seemed pretty, well, limp noodly in comparison.
Maybe he's afraid of making angels too powerful, because then you run into this that unfortunate DM tactic of, I'm going to save you with one of my NPCs who are far badder ass than you are.
Oh, yeah.
And can do so many things better. And then you begin to wonder, well, why are we here? He can take care of everything.
Well, if the DM's going to do that, they're going to do that.
Either
with an angel or, as you say, with an NPC that's really one of their old characters.
It's just so awesome.
So, yeah, I kind of agree with Corbett. The angels could have been beefed up a little bit, particularly in... I'm losing my words here.
Yeah, try to say Christian.
But yeah, in comparison with the demons, it's like, yeah, you've got like a full half page, single column goes on and on and on about demons. Angel gets one small paragraph. The end. Okay.
Yeah, that does seem to be a bit harsh.
Give the angels some stuff. Come on.
Like many clerics. Like, well, you can be the magic user and hurl magic bolts around. Or you could be the fighter and sling heavy weapons. You could be the thief and sneak through darkness. Or you could be the cleric.
Or you could be
and
Hufflepuff.
Heal your friends.
And all the rest.
The rest.
All right. My number two. One of the things, again, that I complained about in 117. Yeah, I know. I complained. That's really weird, right?
How unusual.
How unusual. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that he had in Blueholm Prentice... find and remove traps, like from AD&D. But if you look at original Holmes, it just says remove traps, because back in the day, anybody could look for traps, but only thieves could effectively remove them. And it created a different paradigm, and it gave a lot more use to people running around with 10-foot poles. But in this edition, he took my advice, and it's remove traps, not find and remove traps. Woot.
I'm glad you can reach all the way around to pat yourself on the back for that.
That's right. Ha 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 ha. And all that.
Well, he needs something, since he was so terribly, horribly wrong about 5-point alignment.
Just for that, you got to tell us the number one.
Ah, okay. Well, there's still a lot of things that I would like to talk about in this game. And, the initiative system, how magic missile works, just all these things that I want to mention. But instead, I'm going to say that one of the things which is very fun throughout the book, Michael Thomas uses boxed text for examples for the various rules within the game. Whether it's examples of different types of monster attacks, examples of saving throws, examples of combat, examples of a thief using their thief skills.
Yeah,
and, and throughout these examples are a set of characters that he uses over and over again. One of them may be very familiar to people on the various gaming forums is Thorkammer.
The dwarf.
Yes, Thorkammer is featured throughout various of the example text boxes, and I thought that was a very cool shout out to him.
Yeah.
There's also other fun characters, Hubert Heartburn, one of my favorites, and a magic user, Cedric Catweasel, who I was informed was based upon a character from a 1970s British TV show of the same name.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen it, you can find the first episode and others on YouTube. I firmly suggest you check it out. It's pretty cool. The show's just called Catweasel, so look it up. Yeah, I thought that was very fun. And if you know Thorkammer, it's cool. If you don't know Thorkammer, it's not going to in any way keep you from understanding the box text examples. And
it's just a fun Easter egg.
Yeah, it's a fun little Easter egg, and I thought that was really nice and really neat.
Corbett?
Like Liz was saying, there's a lot of things that we could still... Could we do a top 10? It'd be a little easier.
No. Okay. It would be 3 hours long.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Hey, no one will listen to it.
Okay.
Yeah, well. Oh, no one listens to us anyway. Come on.
Oh, well. My mom does.
No. You know, I'll throw a complaint. Well, it's not a complaint. Cursed weapon. I thought cursed weapon, as cool as the magic items are, and there are a lot of cool magic items. I mean, it's a very extensive system and a write-up for all the magic items, but cursed magic items are, or at least weapons, are a 12% chance, and basically they activate once your weapon is used in anger, which is kind of arbitrary because when you're going to go into combat not angry, but...
Well, I guess if you're being attacked by a dragon, you're not going into battle angry. You're going into battle scared. But yeah, you're right. It's a bit hazy.
As many little detailed things as there are in the magic system for magic items, and there's a lot of cool ones. I mean, there were some fun ones that were classic ones, of course, but there were some really neat ones. It's just like the cursed item just makes you angry and keeps you running into battle, basically, whenever there's a chance for battle. It'd be much funnier if it's something that like made you pee your pants every battle or something, you know, something that just like custom. But I guess it's up to the DM to make it custom.
Although it does make a certain rationale for the old school encounters with berserkers. All the berserkers have cursed items. That would be cute.
That would be kind of neat.
I'm a little more scared at a 12% chance of having a cursed item. 1 out of 10, guys.
Well, technically, there was a 3% chance of that 12 that it's a beneficial cursed item, which I thought was an interesting mix. They weren't
beneficial cursed item?
Well, there were the top two were -2 and -1, but the third one was from like 9 to 12, I think, on the list. It is +1 cursed. So you still have the curse, but you're really good at killing things, so that's good.
You're really good. It's helping you murderize people.
Which I don't know how that's okay. A curse, but, and it does seem a lot like it's basically just a regular player to me, but still.
Murder hobo. Encounter, murder hobo.
Is this entire party cursed?
Unless at convention, in which case it's 20 to 200.
So hardly an upsetting, a terrible thing,
yeah.
But it was just more of a, seems like it could have been a little better.
All right, well, my number one, and this mine aren't in any particular order, I just went down the list. I don't have them as greatest or worst, and this isn't a deal breaker for me by any means. I kind of regret that there aren't races class. I mean, to me, that's one of the icons of classic D&D, is races class. I mean, could you make races class and use it in Blue Home? Of course, but they don't give it. And I guess I can kind of understand he was trying to go the really old school route and not pre-Holmes Basic, go to a brown book where there was no races class, but I miss it. I really do. So that's our top five list. Now let's go see what does and doesn't make their saving throws.
What makes the save, and what is going to take half?
What makes the save, and what doesn't make the save? And this time, we'll start with Corbett.
I went into this thinking that there was really no point in this being made. So positive, but... But I would say I came away with he really took... And I know Liz is going to smite me for saying this, but Holmes was incomplete, and this really finishes it. So
no, I agree.
I love my Holmes, but I will be the first to admit it should have been fleshed out more than it was.
So, yeah, I think as far as, like, an overall just take in from it, like, instead of going to Moldvay Cook or going to Menser, if it just, like, stayed Holmes.
Yeah.
it would have been this.
There was never a lavender or magenta box molding to blue cook. This finishes it, yeah.
So I guess my positive takeaway is this is Holmes. This really feels like Holmes.
Okay.
This is a very broad spectrum positive, but it's a pretty positive thing.
Okay. What doesn't make the save?
Doesn't make the save? It felt like there were things that were just arbitrarily not finished right. Like the swimming, I pointed out the economy as a gimmick, but it felt like it could have been studied a little better. So there were tweaks that I think could ruin a game if you let them, but I think that's really up to the DM. I mean, I think if you... don't let it ruin your game, it won't. So if you drown on the 5% chance after you fall into a puddle, maybe your DM could have let that roll skip.
Well, like that old saying of Steve Chenault, how do you handle swimming in games? It says, I roll a die behind the screen to make people think I'm rolling something. If it that's involved in the plot that he can't swim the stream, then he doesn't. If he can, then he can do it. It's how the DM wants to run the game.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Liz?
Okay, what makes the save? I liked an awful lot about how this was put together and how he extrapolated into the higher levels. I really do feel that he kept the spirit and the feel of Holmes Basic and even the fiction pieces that John Herrick Holmes wrote based on the campaigns he ran. And that kind of segues into what I'm going to say makes the save. There is a part 8 in the back of the book called Campaigns, and it goes into detail on designing a campaign to run your characters through. And I really think that Michael Thomas did an excellent job breaking down the various aspects of a campaign: setting, goal, villain, factions, rumors, designing the underworld, your basic dungeons, etc., designing wilderness, designing the realm. He goes into a lot of detail. If you need that detail, it's great. It's all there. If you don't need that detail, then you can skip it. But even if you're familiar with designing your own campaign worlds, I think it's a very good read. And I think he puts it all into very concise verbiage and just really well done, in my opinion.
I kind of wish that I had had that section in the back of my Holmes back in 1978.
Oh my God, yes.
I mean, I eventually ran into the Delta Area Wargamers, who set me straight on a lot of things, but if I hadn't, I'm not sure how I would have kept running D&D.
But don't you miss the adventure that was in Holmes?
Oh yeah, I love that adventure. I mean, and that was the baseline for a lot of my adventures. But when I first started, all I did was make dungeons.
Yeah, and that was all I did too.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but the campaign could be so much more. None of the, well, how did you get there? Where are you basing at? How's the village handling the fact that you're pouring 900 gold a week into their economy? That sort of thing. Got that many pages, I don't think, either. Part 8?
No, not just tons. You know,
so he doesn't bury you in verbiage, but
yeah,
he gets
you
things
know,
across.
5 or 6 pages and you're done.
Okay, so what doesn't make the save?
I was waffling between two things, and one of them was, as you pointed out earlier, Mike, races class is gone. And that's not a big deal in and of itself, but it bugged me. I want to play elf. I want to play dwarf.
I want to play halfling.
So it bugged me that race as class is gone. On the other hand, I was really thrilled that it basically gave you guidelines for playing whatever kind of race you wanted. It was kind of a trade-off. I wish race as class had still kept on as an option. It's like, if you want to be elf, you can be elf.
Yeah, I could have done it as optional rules.
I'm a third level elf.
So there.
Yeah.
Okay. My makes a save. Index.
Woo!
He has a complete index.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Really well.
Another thing
one,
that I would have found very useful back in the day. Because I come from an age where people know how to use indexes. And I don't have to explain to college students. It's like an analog Google. You go back there and you find the word you're looking for, and it tells you what pages it's on. You laugh. I had to do that.
Michael comes from a dark time when the index ruled the world.
When people had to read books.
And use card catalogs.
Oh, a horrible, horrible time. Anyway, that makes the save. Doesn't make the save. And again, this isn't a deal breaker, but I'm not sure why he did it. There was a pervasive change of terminology in this game. A referee instead of DM, okay, I can live with that. And of course, DM is trademark. Not a big deal. But species instead of race, combined class instead of multi-class. I mean, even encumbrance, you weren't encumbered, you were loaded, which, get back to drinking and falling into a puddle and drowning. You know, there you go. And I don't understand. It's like when I was looking through Gygax's Legendary Adventures, you know, it's like, yeah, you don't take damage, you take harm. You don't have hit points, you have life levels. It's like, but they're hit points, but it's damage. Why are you changing the terminology? We've grown up the RPG dumb, I suppose, like fandom, RPG dumb, has a certain amount of expected parameters. You rolled a hit, you take damage, and that may kill you or not, depending on whether you're using hit points, life levels, wound track, whatever. And I don't know, it just felt like some of these were changed gratuitously. I don't know, maybe it was the terminology Eric Holmes used at his home game? I don't know. So that was weird. No, I didn't like it.
Well, don't like it. I don't think it's that bad. I mean, I understand your complaint there, but in comparison to, like, when I was a kid, I grew up watching Star Trek, and it was always, we're going to warp speed. But then Star Wars came out, and they went to light speed. They both went to some fast speed to get from one point to another point, so it kind of does the job.
Yeah, but you can expect that, because that's copyrighted shows doing their thing, but I see what you're saying, but...
I'm wrong, I know.
Well, no, you're not wrong. You're not exactly. Because in the end, it does work out to what am I used to and what do I want to hear or read or whatnot. But it still bugs me. Okay, Liz, what was your bomb you wanted to drop, or was that it?
Oh, the other thing that...
Yeah, the other thing.
Okay, this is super nitpicky, which was why I wound up not doing it as my doesn't make the save. The character sketch portion on the character sheet is too small. Needs to be bigger. There's not enough room for me to draw in there.
Well,
I want a bigger... It needs to be a square, some weird sideways rectangle.
Did you look at the other character sheets? That was something I had on my list that I didn't get to talk about. So, ha-ha. There are character sheets you can buy on DriveThru RPG that are done by James West.
Oh, JV West, yeah.
JV!
He does some really fun character sheets.
Yeah, he did several versions of the character sheets, and if you buy it, you get like the cleric and the fighter, and you get the different versions.
Uh-huh. Like the old goldenrod sheets, yeah.
Yeah, and they're really, really cool. Honestly, I like them a lot better than the straight out of the book one. Not that the one out of the book isn't bad, it's just kind of generic. And
oh yeah, believe me, I'm not a big fan of the Victorious character sheets that are out for sale. I mean, they do the job, don't get me wrong, but they just, I like Liz's better.
Well, thank you. I like mine better too.
Well, you should.
Which are available free on victoriousrpg.com.
That's right.
Blatant plug.
And I make sure there's a really big square where you can because that is important to me.
Ignore
so
the stats.
When you think
ignore
big
the
squares, think victorious.
That's right.
Well, all that being said, I enjoyed this game. I'd be rather happy if Chase decided to move us to Blueholm Journeyman rather than 2E.
That would be super cool.
I would really enjoy that. Chase, if you're listening, think about it.
And if you're not listening, think about it anyway.
And if you're not listening, why not? Damn you! Just because you have a baby. What's that got to do with anything? Like you don't have time for anything or stuff. Come on. It's a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Keep them in your pocket. Give them an M&M every now and then. They're fine.
Thus speaks someone who has never had a baby.
I have a cat. Does that count? All right. Well, Blueholm Journeyman. If you're interested in more, we'll have a link in the show notes to where you can go get a copy. I believe it is on DriveThruRPG and print on demand. That's been our show. Hope it helps you better understand Blueholm Journeyman. And hopefully you'll go out and get a copy, try it yourself. Have any opinions? Write them in. Tell us we're wrong. Tell us we're right. Tell us we're dumb. We love emails.
Tell us how great 5-point alignment system is.
Make sure to check with your doctor to see if Blueholm Journeyman is right for you, though. Please don't check with your doctor. That would be ridiculous.
If you extend your characters into playing black pudding, see a doctor immediately.
See a cleric.
All right. Well, say goodnight, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Free art.
The Save for Half Podcast is a production of the Mud Puppy Games Network and the Gagman Podcast. The Save for Half theme music is provided by the band Mississippi Bones. You can find them at mississippibones.bandcamp.com. All player characters mentioned in this podcast are fictional, and any resemblance resemblance to PCs living or dead is purely coincidental. No NPCs were harmed in the making of this podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Save for Half.